Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting to my right, as unusual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
The Nelly, a cruising yawl, swung to her anchor without a flutter of the sails and was at rest.
Okay.
Yeah. So, first of all, if you are wondering why I am to Chris's right as opposed to across from him, it's because we have an interesting setup for a different kind of podcast, which may or may not happen. So if it sounds like this podcast is disjointed, as if we had started one, stopped it, and then picked it up later, that's why. I think that's enough mystery, right?
Sure, why not?
So let's talk about what we're actually covering today, because it has nothing to do with that.
No, and I think we should stop hovering around the topic.
No, we gotta get to the chopper! Yeah, we're going to talk about helicopters today.
Yes. And it's kind of surprising that we haven't talked about it before.
Yeah, well, when you start looking into what is involved in making a helicopter work, I can see exactly why we haven't done it before.
Well, you know, the helicopter business does have its ups and downs.
Yeah, nice. I like how you did that. So let's talk about helicopters. So I'm sure all of you are familiar with the concept of a helicopter, but when did these things... How did we come up with this idea? When did this originally spring to mind?
Oh, okay. Well, it is something that has been on my mind since I was a kid. I've always loved helicopters.
Yeah.
So the other day,
yeah,
Jonathan sent me a video that I couldn't watch because my current bandwidth was too low.
Yes.
On my internet connection, and it took me 2 days to actually watch it. But it was a video of some very tiny quadricopters.
Yeah, they were called nano quadricopters in the video itself, although that is a misnomer since nano typically means 1/1,000,000th.
Yeah.
And they were not that small.
No. In fact, they fit on the palm of someone's hand.
Yeah, they're about the size of the palm of your hand.
And I was thinking about how unusual the quadricopter is, because it doesn't have a tail rotor like a traditional helicopter does.
Right.
Yet they're very, very maneuverable. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, hey, Jonathan, why don't we talk about helicopters? Because we never really talked about them before. So.
Right. So
that's how it came to mind.
Yeah, that's how it came to mind. Now, how the idea of a helicopter actually came to mind for human beings in general, that dates back pretty far in human history. And it all begins with a toy.
Yeah, you know, and I think just about everybody who's gone to their school fair or whatever has won one of these little, you know, 72-cent stick with a propeller on it.
Yeah.
And then you spin it in the palm of your hand and let go.
And it'll
and it
fly up
flies
a little bit
the
and then crash down to the earth.
But they weren't always made from plastic.
No. They were the Chinese had a little top mm-hmm. that they used where the top was had feathers on it.
Yes.
And it did the same sort of thing. You would put the stick between your hands. The feathers would be at the top. You spin the stick very quickly. The feathers would spin, and it would create some lift, and the stick would fly up in the air and then come back down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple.
Yep. And as it turns out, the concept is pretty simple. Basically, you're creating an airfoil.
Yes.
That instead of like an airplane wing where you're going forward – it's going straight up simply because the air that moves over the airfoil that creates lift is taking it straight up instead of forward.
Yes. So I guess to really kind of discuss this, we should probably talk about a little bit about the parts of a helicopter.
Yeah.
So that way we can explain what these parts actually do and how they achieve flight.
Mm-hmm.
So the blades that we talk about, that's a rotor.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right?
So the rotors are affixed to a rotor mast. That's the part that actually creates the turning motion that makes the blades go round in a circle. And the blades themselves are angled.
Mm-hmm.
And that angle can change depending upon a control. There are different control rods that can change the attitude of those blades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have two of them, actually. There's the cyclic controller, which mm-hmm. can control them individually.
Yes, that's also known as the stick.
Right. Yeah, that's the stick. And then there's the collective one, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the collective pitch lever, what that does is it actually changes the attitude of all of the rotors, the main rotors, at the same time. Both of those are important for various maneuvers with the helicopter, but we'll get into that in a second. There's also, with the rotors, there's a stabilizer
mm-hmm.
because you've got these long airfoils that are extending out from a shaft and they're turning around and around, there's a chance that they're going to start, you know, flopping around a little bit, causing some issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the stabilizer is there to help add some rigidity there so that these blades will maintain the right shape so that you can fly.
It's kind of funny, too, because apparently it was just one of those things that someone added to the helicopter. As it turns out, it made a major improvement in the stability and flyability of helicopters.
Yeah, the early helicopters, when they were flying, it was a pretty bumpy ride.
Mm-hmm,
And it was definitely a challenge for a pilot to maintain control because it just, you know, without that stabilizer, it just, like you were saying, it just wasn't as flyable.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely a good addition to the parts of a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
There are two plates that are on the rotor mast.
Right.
All right. That also are a big part of the helicopter. It's called the upper swash plate
mm-hmm.
and the lower swash plate. And despite what you might think, they are not joined by a swash buckle. Instead, if you imagine imagine two plates, two round plates.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
And they're both have the shaft of the motor of the rotor rather
mm-hmm.
Goes straight through these two plates. The lower plate is stationary; it does not turn.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the lower plate are ball bearings.
Yes.
And then on top of the ball bearings is the upper swash plate, which does turn.
Yes.
The ball bearings are what allow it to turn over the lower swash plate. Now the swash plate, the reason that's important is, remember when I was talking about the collective control that changes the attitude of all the blades at the same time?
Yes.
What that actually does is it allows that plate to tilt
mm-hmm.
either forward or backward or however you need it to so that you can make the helicopter veer in the direction you want it to go.
Yeah, because really, up until this point, what we were doing was going up and down. We weren't going left or right or
forward
over
or
that way or back this way. Because if you have one of those toys that we were talking about before with the blade on the stick, you point it straight up and it goes straight up and then it'll drift off a little bit to the side. But you don't really control that.
Right.
If you pointed it, you know, at your friend, it's going to go in his or her direction. And that's what these swash plates allow the pilot of the helicopter to do. It helps tilt the blades and the helicopter starts flying in that direction.
Yes, because it adds a second element, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first element you have is lift.
Right.
The second element you would have is thrust.
Yes.
So when you start to change the attitude of the blades, you have both lift and thrust. Now, there is a point where if you were to tilt that beyond a certain threshold, you would no longer have enough lift to counteract the weight of the helicopter itself, and it would start to lose altitude.
Right.
It might be moving forward, but it's going to be going lower and lower until you correct that.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why piloting a helicopter is so challenging. In fact, when we get into the different controls, you'll find out you're using both your legs and both your arms to try and maneuver a helicopter, and so it takes a lot of concentration.
Yeah, yeah. It's also why you don't see a lot of people flying helicopters in loop-de-loops.
Yeah, yeah, that's yes,
unless of course
yes.
they're Airwolf, because
yes,
apparently it
exactly.
can do that.
Right. Yeah, but that is true, because once you get beyond that certain threshold, you no longer have the lift necessary to keep you in the air. Yeah, and these blades are connected to that rotor mast through blade grips. That's the technical term for where the blades fit into this rotor mast. And on the very top of the rotor mast, you have something that's got an interesting name.
Yes.
The Jesus nut.
Yes.
It really is called that. It's called the Jesus nut. And there are various theories as to why it's called that, and I don't know the truth of any of them.
Yes, the one that we have an article on the site.
Yes. It's a really good article, too, with lots of really helpful illustrations. So if you are interested in helicopters and you really want to get a look at what these different parts look like, I highly recommend you check it out, because it's one of the more exhaustive articles on the site, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And very, very illustrative of what you're doing here when you're flying a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the tail rotor just a moment ago.
Yes. Very important in the design of a helicopter. So here's another thing about helicopters. You've got this blade turning around and around that's creating lift, and when the lift gets strong enough to counteract the weight of the helicopter, it's going to rise in the air. Without a tail rotor...
Yeah, if you've ever wondered why that's there.
Yeah, without a tail rotor, which is that little smaller propeller that's on the end of the tail of a helicopter, without it, the body of the helicopter itself would start to spin in a direction opposite that of the rotors. So if the rotors are spinning in a clockwise direction, then the helicopter will start to spin in a Wittershins direction.
You just wanted to use Wittershins.
Yes, I did.
You?
So badly counterclockwise, for those of you who do not speak archaic English. hey, where are my Shakespeare homies at? So anyway, yes, the helicopter would spin without any other force to counteract this.
Mm-hmm.
The helicopter would start to spin in the opposite direction,
which
would probably be an unpleasant experience for anyone inside that helicopter.
Yes.
Yeah, so the rotor, what that does is it helps to create thrust to counteract the spinning motion so that the helicopter stays stationary. And by controlling the speed of that rotor, you can actually turn the helicopter to the left or to the right, not banking it, but actually if you're hovering in place, you can change the speed that rotor turns and then turn your helicopter so it's facing an opposite direction. So if it started facing north, you could maybe face west, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, for this, we have a guy named Igor to thank for that.
Yes, Igor did a great job.
Yeah, of all the people who experimented with the idea of being able to levitate a person. I mean, there were many, including our friend Leo.
Yeah, Leonardo da Vinci.
Yep, yep.
He tried to create something that he called the air screw, which was a screw shape. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that with four people powering this, man-powered, of course, back in Leo's day, that if you were able to turn this air screw fast enough, it would be able to create enough lift to lift the machine off the ground. Now, he never got this to work. but it was sort of the basis of the idea of what would eventually become a helicopter, although mm-hmm. it changed dramatically by the time the helicopter actually appeared.
Yep, yep. Now, Igor Sikorsky, if you've spent any time at all paying attention to helicopters, that name's going to be very familiar to you, mm-hmm. Was a Russian who experimented with the idea of helicopters and then kind of moved away to get into other types of airplane flight and then sort of came back to it later on.
Yeah, his early attempts were not met with very much success.
No.
So he decided, hey, you know what? Let's just put this on the back burner and look at something that I know will work.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
eventually, once he felt more confident, he revisited this idea of the helicopter.
Yeah. Back in the around the 1930s, I think, is when he started really having some luck with it. And he realized mm-hmm. that he was going to need something to prevent the helicopter body from spinning like that without yeah. any kind of force. So he decided to mount a tail rotor on his helicopter and basically it's creating force in a sideways manner that is resisting the force that would naturally cause the helicopter to turn. So, you know, hats off to Igor.
Yeah,
but that was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it was in 1939 when he created the VS-300, which was based off these early designs, and it actually worked. It lifted him up into the air. It was a bit of a bumpy ride, but then he ended up trying to, he refined the design of it. And then actually had he broke a record on May 6, 1941. He broke the world helicopter endurance record and stayed in the air for 1 hour, 32 minutes, and 26.1 seconds. And, that's pretty impressive. I mean, for an invention that people had played with for centuries, really, but no one had really cracked it. It was a big jump. Mm-hmm. And speaking of jumps, we should say that between the time of the top toy that was invented in ancient China mm-hmm. and the time that Sikorsky created the first working helicopter, there were a lot of other people who were involved in trying to make this work, and some of their contributions led into Sikorsky's work.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these early inventions that were created, we call them hoppers mm-hmm. because they could lift off the ground briefly, but they couldn't really sustain flight for any length of time, and they didn't really have any way of changing the direction of that flight. It just would go up and down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, apart from being pushed around by whatever wind happened to be in the area.
Yeah, being pushed around by wind. That's not a problem.
But then, so 1941, he breaks the record. It turns out the helicopters would become really important in warfare.
Oh, yeah.
That actually became a very the United States in particular really depended upon helicopters in conflicts in Korea and Vietnam.
Hey, you know, I've seen MASH.
Yeah. Yeah, it starts off with one.
Yes.
Through early morning fog I see.
Yeah.
This was a pretty interesting development. I mean, you see a lot of the experimental aircraft from that era just became oddities.
Yes, autogyros. Really,
yes, which you can still find autogyros.
True, true.
And we should explain what the difference between an autogyro and a helicopter is.
Yes.
So with a helicopter, those rotors we're talking about, those are powered. That mm-hmm. that rotor mast turns under power. There's an engine and a transmission. The engine provides the power. Transmission converts it over into the mechanical energy that the rotors need in order to turn.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes the blades turn fast enough to create the lift.
Yes.
Autogyros have unpowered rotors.
Right.
So there is a set of rotors on top of an autogyro. So in a way, it kind of resembles like a miniature helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a propeller that's either in the front or the back of the autogyro. It all depends on the design of the specific autogyro,
mm-hmm.
which that's what provides thrust. And what happens is it generates an airflow that is directed up at the rotors that are above the autogyro.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
upward flowing amount of air is what makes the blades start to turn. And you just keep increasing the airflow, which again makes the blades turn faster until that helps counteract the weight of the autogyro. And that's what allows the autogyro to fly. But there's no motor turning those blades. It's all just from the flow of air.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. As a matter of fact, some of the more modern helicopters also have a second engine. Which can help, you know, of course, if in the case of the first engine going out, But you know, there's some redundancy there now in the more modern helicopters, especially for military helicopters that might be affected by enemy fire.
Right. Sure. Yeah. If you have an engine failure, then you can switch over to a second engine and hopefully prevent catastrophe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the controls that are inside a helicopter. Of course, you have lots of different dials and indicators that give you
sure.
information about the environment and information about your helicopter's performance. Those are all they're too numerous to name, really. But mm-hmm. the actual controls, when we were talking about using both your hands and both your feet, well, one hand's going to be on that cyclic pitch lever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the lever that controls the angle of each of the rotor blades individually.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is used mainly to tilt the craft to either side or forward and backward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done in very – it's not the one that changes the swash plate. That's the collective pitch lever. So that's the, you know, that's your second one that you're holding with your other hand. It's mainly used in things like takeoff and landing. It's used to increase or decrease the pitch of all the rotor blades at the same time. And it's mostly responsible for up and down movements, not things like forward, backward, left, right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got your foot pedals, and these are what control the tail rotor. And so using the tail rotors, this is how you can turn the helicopter so it faces a different direction. You're not banking it, but you're turning it, or you're using it just to keep it steady. And if you're wondering, you know, well, what about hovering? Isn't mm-hmm. that easy? No. Hovering is actually pretty difficult to do because you have to get everything in a neutral position, and then you have to keep making minor adjustments in order to maintain the position that you're in. In fact, pilots will have to pick a spot that they can look at
mm-hmm.
and try and maintain their attitude and altitude by referencing where that spot is and making minor adjustments constantly.
Yes. Yeah, it helps to have an experienced pilot on board, just because not only is there the matter of looking at the electronic components in the craft itself, but to orient him or herself with the land around, just to give a visual representation of what's going on. And that's one of those things that's especially important because the wind does blow helicopters around.
Yeah.
You have to take these things into account. And one of the best ways to do that is to use that visual orientation to make sure that you haven't drifted off to some degree.
Yep. Now, let's talk really quickly about what the process is like if you are taking off in
okay.
a helicopter. So there's several steps. First, what you would have to do is you have to open up the throttle so
mm-hmm.
that you can speed up these rotors so that they start turning at a speed fast enough to create the amount of lift you need.
Mm-hmm.
You do this by actually twisting the handle of one of the levers you're holding in your hands. And twisting it one way opens the throttle, and twisting it the other way closes the throttle. So that's, you know, that's essentially like stepping on the accelerator of an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
So next, what you would do is once you've got the rotors moving at the right speed, you'd start to pull back on the collective control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to raise the swash plate assembly, and that's going to change the pitch of the rotor blades, and then that's what's going to let you direct that lift in the right direction so that you can actually get off the ground.
Right.
Then you would start to press down on the left foot pedal, because you would need to get the tail rotor spinning so that you could counteract that torque we were talking about, the tendency for the chassis to spin in the opposite direction of the rotors.
Right. As soon as you're lifting off the ground, it's going to be much easier for the rotors to start to spin the body of the helicopter, the
right.
fuselage.
Yeah, so if you were not making that tail rotor spin, you would start to go on a little
mm-hmm.
spinny ride
yeah.
yourself, which would most likely end in disaster.
Yeah.
So yeah, you then would start to actually add a counteractive thrust through the tail rotor by pressing down that left pedal. Now, if you got to a point where you needed to turn or you needed to slow that down, you could stop pressing down the left pedal and start pressing down the right pedal, and that's what would counteract that. Then you keep pulling back on that collective control while holding down the left foot pedal. And once the correct amount of lift is created, your helicopter will leave the ground. And you'll be flying over the air and delivering traffic reports like nobody's business.
Nice.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And there's even other challenges to flying a helicopter, right? I mean, not only is it requiring a lot of coordination, but even just the way that the air flight works, when you start traveling, say, forward, like you're moving forward at around 15 to 20 knots of airspeed, you end up transitioning from hovering, which is more or less staying fairly stationary, to moving and a full forward flight phase. And that's where you have the effective translational lift, or ETL. And at that point, the pilot would start to ease up on that left foot pedal and move closer to a neutral setting. And there's going to be a shudder that you'd feel through the rotor system because you are going to fly out of what is called rotor wash. And rotor wash is not where you go to a place where people start pouring sudsy water all over your rotor blades and then squirt them down. That's not a rotor wash. Rotor wash is actually turbulence, which is created by these rotor blades turning so quickly.
Yes.
And you fly through your own turbulence.
Yeah.
Then once you get to a certain angle, that turbulence is no longer directed in your flight path, and you end up having this much more smooth experience. So before you hit that flying in that helicopter might feel a little, well, pardon the pun, but choppy, because you just, you know, you're actually flying through turbulence that you have created through the helicopter itself. By the way, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I have friends who were in the Marines, and they said that the way the Marines would explain helicopters is they say, helicopters fly by beating the air into submission. Which is a funny, very Marines kind of thing to say. Semper Fi. So the it's a pretty interesting method of flight. It's amazing to me, even seeing them now. I mean, you can see the helicopters outside the windows of our office fairly frequently. We're in a part of Atlanta where we'll see traffic helicopters or news helicopters fly overhead. And in fact, when the article was being written for the site, Marshall Brain, the founder of How Stuff Works, had contacted a company in Atlanta that did helicopter tours and helicopter pilots worked for him, mm-hmm. and managed to get the president of the company to agree to fly a helicopter so that we could get some video, mm-hmm. which led to one of the more famous incidents at How Stuff Works,
yeah.
where this helicopter pilot flew relatively close to the building,
mm-hmm.
and anyone who was on our floor knew what was going on. Well, not even everyone here. Most of the people knew what was going on, but anyone on any other floor had no idea, and I'm pretty sure we terrified half of an office building.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But it was Marshall Brain who did that, so not us. Not us. But yeah, we've got some pretty cool footage from those videos. I mean, how could you not? We have some pretty cool footage from those videos that are part of this article. So if you want to see what I'm talking about in action, go to howstuffworks.com, look up how helicopters work. And we have other articles about helicopters as well, including specific ones like how the Apache helicopter works, mm-hmm. which goes into more detail about other systems besides the flight control system. It's also got weapon systems and its role in military applications. Mm-hmm. We're, of course, just really focusing on the basics of helicopter flight. But let's also talk now. Do you have anything else you want to talk about specifically about helicopters before I move on to quadricopters?
No, go right ahead.
Okay, so quadricopters. Now, if you haven't seen one of these, these tend to be these little unmanned aerial vehicles,
yeah.
that have four rotor systems on them.
Yeah, the ones I've seen have been primarily for models for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, yeah, RC-controlled ones, or sometimes that you can control them through a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
In our RC episode, we talked a little bit about them. Why are you grinning at
me? Someone's going to write in about RC-controlled.
I'm sorry.
Remote control control?
I stopped by over my ATM machine radio with my PIN number, and I got an RC-controlled helicopter. How about that? How about them apples?
All right, then.
Okay. So anyway, yes, there's also ones that you can control with your smartphone. The Parrot AR drone.
Yeah.
Which was at CES the first time, I think, was maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was very impressive to see. That was the first time I had ever seen a four-rotor copter, a quadricopter.
Right.
And you might wonder, well, how do these things work? They don't have a tail rotor.
Yeah.
There's no tail rotor. So how do they counteract that torque we were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty clever.
Yeah.
Two of the rotors on a quadricopter turn in one direction.
Right.
And the other two turn in the other direction.
And they cancel each other out.
Yes. The opposite, they both produce enough torque so that you can keep the quadricopter from turning in place either one way or the other. And when I say you, I don't really mean you, because most of these have pretty sophisticated microprocessors on board that really register, measure the amount of torque and all the other elements here so that they can make adjustments to the speed of each of those rotors in order to maintain the proper attitude and altitude of that device.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is say, I want you to go over there. And then all these other microprocessors do everything that they can to make that happen while keeping it nice and safe. Which is pretty cool. I mean, you know, you think about all the work that they have to do in order for that to turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are lots of different kinds of quadricopters. And if you do want to make it turn, like if you want to make it bank one way or the other, again, what happens is the quadricopter adjusts the speed at which certain rotors are spinning.
Right. And so the lift changes.
Exactly. Yes. The lift changes and the torque changes. Mm-hmm. So the two together can make you strafe it to the left or to the right or forward or backward. We've seen some that can do flips, mm-hmm. because what they'll do is one side will spin very, very quickly while the other side stops spinning. It'll lift up into the air, and then they'll switch the directions of the rotors so that it flips it in midair and lands back right side up, mm-hmm. with all rotors going so that it goes back into flying.
Mm-hmm.
And the video that we were talking about at the very top of this podcast was a little unnerving, really.
Yeah.
Because we were seeing groups of these quadricopters that were all following the same program. And you could have them grouped into individual little squadrons, like squadrons of four quadricopters.
Right.
And I think there were something like they were using 12 in all. So they had three groups of four.
Yeah.
And they would send the three groups of four through an obstacle course, and they would maneuver past each other. But they would all – the four quadricopters would move as a single unit.
Right.
Which was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
You know, to see something move, like several small things all moving together as one like that, was a little odd. And they could make them move through things like windows, which was way creepier.
Yeah, I got these images of drones coming into your house.
Yeah.
And going,
"Hello, Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
We have something we'd like to say to you." Uh-oh. Skynet. Yeah. No, it's the
video. You did
video.
Not pay your water bill.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the video we're talking about specifically, and I'll try and link to this when we do some show notes, is called Precise Aggressive Maneuvers for Autonomous Quadroters.
Quadroters.
I was going to say quadricopters, but it's spelled quadrotors, and it totally threw me off. But this was done through the GRASP lab, G-R-A-S-P, at the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's General Robotics Automation Sensing and Perception.
Yeah, so this particular video shows these tiny quadricopters moving through various maneuvers. What's interesting here is that the one I'm looking at right now, this is one of those videos that just got really popular all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, it's like been a meme. I bet several of our listeners have seen this.
Yeah, but the video that I'm looking at right now was uploaded in 2010.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, and we're just now starting to catch on. Sometimes the internet's a little slow to catch on to memes. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was something that started to make the rounds in and on Google Plus and on Facebook recently, and Twitter as well. And just one of those cool things that it turns out it's been in the works for a few years, but we just started to get the attention of the world in general.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows a really interesting approach to programming these quadricopters and showing their capabilities and what they might be used for. And you might think, okay, well, you know, you put a camera on these and then suddenly you've got a spy plane. But you could also have it for something like first responders.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a – let's say there's an accident and you send some of these in that to in order to scan the scene and make sure that, one, it's safe enough to send in emergency response teams, and, two, whether or not it's even necessary to send in emergency response teams. You may send in – let's say there's a building that's on fire and you send some of these over to look. Because, I mean, it's, these things relatively to a human life are cheap.
Oh, yeah.
They're nothing. So you can make as many of these as you like. They're going to be, they might be a little expensive, but it's less expensive than losing a human life.
Yeah.
So you send these things in and take a look around. It may turn out that, oh, you know what? That building was completely abandoned. There was no one in there. So we don't need to risk the lives of any emergency responders. We can just use the firefighters to try and put this fire out.
Right.
So that's the kind of idea that we'd be looking at from that point forward. And, you know, there's a lot of other possibilities. Besides that, I mean, that's traffic, you know, having them look at traffic, things like that. That's, these are all possibilities. Now, granted, you have to figure out how to supply the power to these things. Most of them are battery operated and the battery will only last so long. So it's not like you would send out, you know, wake up, punch the clock, send out 50 quadricopters to cover the city. And then at the end of the day, they all come back. So, you know, it's not like it's not like you can solve all the problems just by sending out quadricopters.
Right.
But it's a cool idea, and the videos are pretty awesome. Also, the parrot videos.
Yeah.
Those are really cool, too, because those have incorporated smartphone applications.
Yes, and you could see through the camera.
You can see, yes. You can use it as a surveillance tool, although it is, it's whisper quiet. I've used that phrase like 8 times on tech stuff recently, but yeah, it's not like it's subtle. It's, you'll hear a when you're playing with one of these things, but yes, you can use it to look through the camera, and they've even incorporated games into the drones so that you can, if you have one and your friend has one, you're both controlling them with your smartphones, you can play a game where you're essentially kind of like laser tag, but with drones.
Yep.
How awesome is that? And then they also have other games where they'll have targets show up on your screen. They don't actually exist in real life.
Yeah.
It's an augmented reality program where the targets appear on your screen and your job is to fly your drone so that you can use a little imaginary laser to shoot down these targets. It's neat stuff like that. And it really, I mean, beyond the fact that a quadricopter is pretty darn cool by itself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that one in particular also has some bumpers that it's sort of a shield for the rotors.
Yes, yes.
So that you can fly it indoors. A lot of the model helicopters I've seen are more traditional and do not have that kind of protection for the rotor, so you wouldn't want to necessarily fly it around your house.
You wouldn't want to bang into a lamp or something.
Yeah, even I've seen some of the small ones that are palm sized.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if it actually touches something, it could damage it or the copter or both, and that would be,
you could bang into someone and cut them.
Very serious.
But yeah, the AR drone one, the little bumpers you're talking about, they look like little discs that fit around, like hollow discs. So, they fit right around where the rotors are. And so it kind of makes this a safer device so that if it were to bump into something, you would just get bumped. You wouldn't get cut.
Yeah, yeah. Still, you wouldn't want to get it around people or pets, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. But it makes it a little safer. Yeah, it's kind of neat. And then I've also heard from enthusiasts, people who really enjoy flying RC helicopters and RC quadricopters, that if you're interested in this, a quadricopter in general tends to be a lot easier to fly because those microprocessors I was talking about do a lot of the fine tuning for you.
Yeah.
So all you do is you tell it, I want you to go up, and it takes care of the controls that needs to make those different rotors spin at the right speeds and makes it go up or turn left or turn right or strafe or whatever. So it can be a lot of fun, and it can get people into the hobby, and it's not incredibly challenging. On the other hand, flying a remote control helicopter requires a lot of finesse. Not quite the same sort of thing you would need if you were flying a life-size helicopter, but still, it does require that you control things like the tail rotor and that you're very methodical with the way that you try and turn the helicopter, maneuver it, takeoffs and landings. It's actually, from what I understand, one of the more challenging RC vehicles to control. Because there's just so much you have to keep in mind. However, that being said, even though it's really challenging, I also hear it's one of the most enjoyable experiences, very rewarding, because once you master that, you know, you really have a sense of accomplishment. So if you are interested in that kind of hobby, I recommend you go ahead and, you know, check it out. See what it would look, how much it would cost to get into it. Cause these devices can be fairly expensive. Sometimes a few hundred dollars is on the low end of some of these devices.
Right.
But it is something that if you're interested in learning more about flight, if you're interested in, just kind of getting a new skill, it's kind of a cool thing to get into. And, you know what? I've never actually ridden in a helicopter. Have you?
No.
That's one of my goals.
Yeah,
I really want to do it. I want to do just a simple helicopter tour.
Yeah,
nothing terribly, you know, exciting. I was thinking about actually doing one in Hawaii because I thought, well, heck, that would be amazing.
Oh yeah,
you know the landscape and everything. But I happen to be married to someone who finds air travel to be the not the most relaxing experience, and so I didn't do that. I did go parasailing though.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally not at all like flying in a helicopter.
No, I would imagine not.
Yeah, I don't even know why I brought it up.
Okay.
All right, so let's wrap this up, guys. This was fun. I'm glad we did this because, you know, we like to try and tackle lots of different kinds of topics here at Tech Stuff. We like to talk about the things that are big social phenomena, you know, things like social networking sites and how technology affects us personally or as a society. And we like to talk about companies and we like to talk about innovators. But once in a while, it's fun to take a specific type of technology and really deconstruct it and talk about the various parts and what makes it go tick or fly in this case. So if you guys have any suggestions for future topics, no matter which category they may be, and we'll even open it up a little bit. We're hoping this year, and I'm saying hoping because there's no guarantee it's ever going to work out, but we're hoping that we can maybe get a few guests on the show in the future. So if you have any specific guests in technology that you think would be an interesting interview for Tech Stuff, let us know, and we will try our best to see if we can arrange something. Now, keep in mind, that requires the scheduling of not just the two Tech Stuff hosts you've come to know and love, but whatever amazing person you have come up with. So we'll do our best, but we can't make any promises. But let us know. Send us a message. You can tell us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. Or send us an email. That address is TechStuff@discovery.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.